there's some thoughts that have a direct experiential element and an immediacy to it.
What's your experience?
Because I was thinking about something to say, they all seem to be pointers.
Oh.
To something after the fact.
Right, right.
And then I was reflecting on it. Kind of more of a meditative presence. But then the words are gone.
Yeah. One manner of speaking, you know, a thought is useless. It doesn't really frame or embellish the potency of your actual experience. To feel yourself sentient, alive, aware, available, kind of a curious reciprocity with the right gift of living itself, thought is absolutely useless.
Well, what do you do with it?
What do you do with what?
That feeling of yourself that is so vibrant and so aware. I'm sitting here and I'm aware of the purple here and the purple here, and I'm aware that the rug doesn't quite match, and I wondered how somebody screwed that up, and I'm hearing the air conditioner, and I'm aware of a whole lot of things. But then I find myself saying, okay, so will I do just sit here and keep hearing the air conditioner and keep looking at the color purple? I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here. I just realized. And I don't know what I can say that's okay and not okay. I would like to say to you, I would like to hear from you a little short synopsis on what this experience would be for people like me. You guys have been coming a while, I assume, and maybe you have a clear sense of it. I always have the feeling of I'm as alive as anybody here, and I'm as aware of everything as anybody here, but my awareness and my aliveness wants to respond, and I think I'm not supposed to do that, but I'm not sure. So.
What do you want to dance and paint something?
Oh, well, dancing would not be a bad idea.
Well, please, the floor is open.
Actually, I meant verbally.
Yeah.
How do I know what is the thing that I shouldn't be, that you would say it would not be appropriate here? How do I know what's good and what's bad, or in or that, or what is appropriate and what's not appropriate? How do I know that?
Yeah. Well,
is that
we don't know. So then you're not alone. Before you, respond to the name purple or the chaos of the rug.
Yeah.
These, call them sense tickles, right? Sense engagement is already so.
Mm-hmm.
So what would it feel like to be aware of the things that you're aware of? Without naming them. Without converting them into a pointer.
Without calling it purple. Without
yeah.
saying purple
yeah.
and without saying red.
Yeah. I'm not trying to silence you. This is just experiential. It's inwardly. There's all this availability of engagement.
Well, the purple is shouting at me, and I don't know how I would get that out of my head. Because you're saying, could you experience it without thinking of it as purple, without naming it?
Well, I would say you all are already experiencing, in a manner of speaking, everything firsthand. The naming is an artifact. Mm-hmm. naming is absolutely, in a sense, completely unnecessary. Thought has nothing at all to do, actually, with the fundamental nature of sentience, of that there is experiencing. We become addicted, in a manner of speaking, to thought, presuming that it's the only worthwhile vehicle for me to enjoy myself or be in communication or communion with someone else. And we're just looking at what's the nature of communion before we turn our presence into a story. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make anything correct versus incorrect. It's just it's a question. It's a matter of, let's say, inviting your awareness into a level of self-appreciation that we can say is commonly missed.
Now that went right over my head.
Good.
I have absolutely no idea what you meant by that. A level of appreciation is commonly missed, of self. Appreciation of self is commonly missed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Appreciation of self is commonly missed.
Right. So what I'm suggesting is you or this or presence is present unambiguously, but you don't have to turn anything into a story or a destination.
Which means naming it.
That's right.
Like naming things.
That's right.
Which is thinking.
Yes.
So
naming is thinking.
So better just to feel it.
Well, not better. Just give it a whirl. Feel it. See what you discover.
Well, I feel I do, but I don't know what to do with it. I want to talk about it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's cool. Talk about it.
No.
You changed your mind.
Well, no. I don't know.
That's fine, too.
Who cares?
That works, too.
It's my struggle, so... See, I guess I'm thinking that you think if... You're assuming that if I'm naming things, that I'm not absorbing it in other ways, that I'm not...
No.
No?
I'm not. No, that would be presumptuous on my part. Of course, I make a lot of presumption. But
yeah, I thought you might be making that presumption.
No. No, I would say, yeah, you're feeling everything in robust tonality.
What would be an appropriate thing? There is no appropriate statement for anybody to make.
That's a revelation.
Would be whatever came bubbling up. My statements are appropriate for me because that's all I have.
They come bubbling up.
That's all I have right now.
Yeah. Well, that's all any of us have or don't have. It's what's bubbling up. Yeah, we have a bubble fest.
Some things get, developed, and other things get kind of like quelled.
Yeah. We're playing around with the artifacts of, or the symptoms of revelation. Not necessarily to sort them out or make them right or wrong, but playing around with the symptoms and artifacts of revelation because they all point back to, right, the fundamental nature of revelation, that this is so. You could say that, few of us rest in the wild simplicity that this is so, because we become instantaneously preoccupied by naming and comparison and measure and story.
unmatching rugs.
and restlessness of all kind, whether it's, you know, internal restlessness, emotional restlessness, psychological restlessness, tactile, locomotive restlessness, right? So this is the yoga of feeling yourself without having to suppress anything that bubbles up or make sure that what bubbles up is suitable to the rest of the group or not.
Ah,
I mean, you're not going to be condemned here. You're not going to be, you know, judged. I mean, we can all be a pain in the ass, and I think we're all really good at being a pain in the ass, but that's cool. We're amongst friends. No one's singling anybody out for being a better or worse pain in the ass than anybody else.
Yeah, I have complete faith in that fact.
Yeah.
That nobody judges anybody else.
You know. We have fun gossiping about each other when so-and-so's not in the room. then that's cool.
You won't be judged, but you will be gossiped about.
Yeah. No, we don't judge you.
And we don't record
here,
that part.
Oh, yeah.
We leave that out.
Absolutely. I mean, just go to the bathroom. You'll see what happens. You'll hear it on the tape.
No,
it's instantaneous.
It.
Oh, is she
right.
Gone? Oh, my God. What's she doing here?
Oh, yeah. No, that's the question I ask myself. I sometimes I come to your meetings and I say, what are you doing here, girl?
That's a good question.
But several weeks... Oh, see, now I want to... Now I have an idea and I'm saying, wait a minute. Is that appropriate?
Well, you decide.
Well, you'll shush me if it's not right.
I'll be happy to.
We're all just start rolling our eyes.
We're all like,
oh,
yeah, look away.
She doesn't know what
away,
she's doing.
No, she said that. Oh my gosh!
You can see this is just a playful experiment in improvisational togetherness.
It's always fun to get pegged as a narcissist, though. You know. You will be pegged.
That's right. Everyone's peggable. Yeah. It's funny. I mean, it's an interesting experiment for humans to hang out. We're not trying to impress each other socially, politically. We're not trying to enroll each other in, you know, a scheme. Just kind of chilling, right? Loitering. And then seeing what bubbles up from just the willingness, the voluntary willingness to loiter together. And this is an uncommon way for people to hang out.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
It certainly is.
And that's, if that
my,
has...
Go ahead. My sense is that I want more.
More. Yeah.
I want more from people. I want to know more about them. I want to hear them talk, and I want to know something about the stories, their stories, even though
absolutely.
Their stories, I know their stories.
Yeah.
But a couple years ago, I said I felt we needed our stories. I need my stories. Because the only way I can talk about myself is stories.
Understood.
So, but the more is what you're trying to discourage because that gets into stories and thinking and naming.
Well, you move into, you know, anecdotal way of relating, hypothetical way of relating, social way of relating. And that kind of relating, which is swell, I mean, you know, we do it day in and day out, you know, at work, at home, in commerce, on the phone. That's very commonly how we relate. So we're just looking at an experiment which says, well, what does it look like, what does it feel like to hang out without resorting to the common ways that we communicate with each other? And I'm not condemning at all the deliciousness of sharing stories with people. I mean, we're all fascinating. We've all got tons of stories to tell, and they're hilarious and tragic and fun and, you know, and annoying and every possible thing. Mm-hmm. We're just, we're improvising, you could say, with a little different set of rules.
And we all roll our eyes and go, oh God.
Baby.
Can you still hear another
story? We all get a dopaminergic bump from an anecdotal story.
You know, meditation practice is deliberately, let's say, silent, right? Mm-hmm. Introverted. We might sit together in the same room on a cushion, on a chair, on a rocker, whatever it is, but our agreement when we meditate together is that everyone is, you know, hopefully relaxing, dwelling within their own experience.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are sitting on our respective cushions, in this case, comfortable ones, and we're meditating out loud. Mindfulness in a manner of speaking is a quality of receptivity, availability to see what bubbles up, but you don't necessarily have to become overwhelmed or overcome by what bubbles up. You don't have to take what bubbles up in mind as being an order of magnitude of reality. As a matter of fact, it might be fun to discover that what bubbles up in mind is not real at all.
What gets through the filter and what doesn't, though. Like how it bubbles up into words as opposed to
feelings.
Well, just the thoughts. Okay, there's a filter, hopefully. Some of it, you know, goes to, you know, form words where other words don't. What's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, what is appearing in your consciousness and what bubbles up is, in a sense, remarkably chaotic, remarkably random.
Yeah.
Well, maybe behind that randomness, I guess I'm addicted to words. I know I am addicted to words. Yeah, so...
Maybe you're addicted to, you know, the comfort, the boundary, the sense of
control
or belonging or opinion, right?
That words can name it appropriately, then I'm in more control.
That words appear to convey, right?
Yeah.
So it's not that we're addicted to words per se as an object appearing in consciousness. We might be addicted or, without using such strong a word, we might be fond of, we might be entertained by the feeling that we get.
All of those.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
As we use words, whether through internal dialogue or in expressive communication with each other.
Or just a comforting to like a predisposed social agreement that doesn't actually exist, but that you feel the need to fill with
whatever. I mean, couldn't we say that all bandwidth of experience is only makes sense in a manner of speaking because it's felt.
Well, I feel that places speak to me, environments speak to me, not with words.
Yes.
But with feelings.
Yes.
And it's strange to sit here because I'm not able to interpret and turn into words the feeling I get from this environment.
Yeah. The feeling is still irrefutable, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very strong.
Yeah.
It is the feeling of this place. When I think about it a week from now, I will still have probably be called that feeling.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting that your predominant experience of experiencing is feeling? We're not talking about sentiment.
Yeah.
Talking about the profound, irrefutable nature of present felt sense. That a voice, a person, a body language, gesture, plastic flowers on the table.
None of that really matters because the feeling is telling me something much more accurate.
Yes. So that's, you could say, what one of the salient elements we explore, play with, is the feeling tone of your present experience. Without, in a manner of speaking, diluting it or converting it into a spoken story.
The feeling tone, without converting it into words.
Yes.
So, I guess my curiosity is what other people are feeling.
Feel free to ask.
Somehow I feel that would be an imposition.
Okay. It's your pleasure.
I just feel that would be putting somebody on the spot.
In a manner of speaking, maybe not. The other fun thing that might be worth discovering is that even if someone were to ask you, without it being an imposition or placing them on the spot, how or what, or how would you describe the way you're feeling right now, we would all be dumbfounded.
We would be what?
Dumbfounded. Because the miraculous bandwidth of what we are feeling presently is so wide, is so incredible, is so luscious, is so subtle, that choosing any one thing to say about it couldn't possibly be true.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a grand grand masquerade to say anything really about just how profound and wide open your feeling tone is. No word could possibly convey it. And it's morphing so quickly that by the time you were even to select something that you'd like to say about it and then had the wherewithal to speak that to someone else, it would be old news, distant history.
There's some fun that happens with words, though, sometimes. Not as a pointer. It's coming to me now. A child, in my guy sometimes, a word will pop into my head. I have no idea of what it means. But it's fun. The sound of it in my head is fun. And then I say it, and it's fun, and I say it again. And it reminds me of the kid who can't stop saying the new word. But he doesn't care that it points to anything. It's a feeling,
yeah,
with the vibrational,
yeah,
sound of, mm-hmm, a word,
yeah,
which is kind of backwards in sense. It's not a word that I'm using to convey something.
Right.
It's a word I'm experiencing.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
Yeah.
Or it's tickles in some way.
Yes.
I have a great example of that, but if I talked about it, I would be telling a story. And then...
Go for it.
Well, there's no rule here that says,
don't
tell a story. Tell a story.
Well, when my granddaughter...
That's enough.
I took her to an art show, and she was just learning words. And I said, we're going to go to an art show. And so she learned those words. And all the way driving
up there, she said, art show, art show, art show, art show. And she just loved her mastery of the words. Okay. You didn't shush me enough. You got to hit me on the head.
I break the rules all the time. And then I shout.
Well, there's no rules. I mean, this is your life. Really, it is. This is your life. You could say this is where you chose to come, let's say, this evening, to get the most enjoyment out of your life. This was the best offer you had.
That's true.
Tonight.
That's true. This is the best offer I've
had. that you were willing or capable of responding to. If someone had called you and said, "Dee, like, come downtown with me. The Who are playing." Maybe you would have jumped in the car, you know, smoked a doobie on the way down, and enjoyed a Who concert. But no, you came here to the Giant Mart.
I would say this is the only offer I've
had. Me too.
We use words with great confidence, grandeur, and, you know, we think that we're expressing a lot of meaning to ourselves or to each other. And when you look once again at just how strangely plasma-like and amorphous your present experience is, and that you could not come up with a million words to begin to reflect accurately just how strange your present experience is, you can see that words fail pretty much instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a very, I think, curious paradox that we can have an insight into the failure of words to convey anything about the nature of present reality. And yet, in a moment, any of us could come up with a delightful story flowing with tons of, you know, well-chosen, put-together words that convey humor, meaning, whatever, like that. Even though we can appreciate the insight that there's no way to convey the curious fact of your present experience, we can hook into, call it virtual or anecdotal communication. In an instant, with aplomb, intelligence, humor. Some of us make a good living, like comics or playwrights or actors or musicians, right? Make more money than any of us will ever know by putting together, you know, the cleverest, simplest, most pleasing combinations of words. Shakespeare didn't do so bad. I don't know what he would be worth in 2014 dollars.
Well, it does seem like there's even though it's, there isn't a hierarchy or anything, it does seem like there is a sort of staleness to some words, you know, compared to, you know, a word that pops in your head that you enjoy saying, or like a vibrancy to some compared to others.
Yeah. You can can have a whole stream of, call it thinking or thoughts, which don't actually resolve into anything, don't actually concretize as a story, or some kind of insistence, or the recollection of a to-do, or a regret, or a desire. You can have all kinds of, call it subtle, weird thinking energy going on, but none of it actually turns into anything.
Part of that has to do with like us wanting validation for our experience, which is comical in that if anything you just said is true, it's not that it's like impossible, but with words, you know, everything that I say has some bizarre meaning to me that you just can't, I can't even begin to explain this in words. So how the hell are you going to grasp what my experience is via words?
Yeah.
Through my filter of whatever bizarre, you know.
You can really put a dent in validation seeking.
Or you'd be willing to, just not interested in entertaining it.
Yes.
Either way, I guess.
Yes.
Or needing it in some way from other people.
Well, is that a failure? Somewhere. I just wonder if understanding the essence feeling and understanding the essence by feeling without words is any more a whole way of experiencing than it is if you also have words. Because I noticed that there are some words that will open up, put a light on what people are trying to. When I work with people, I have strong feelings about what's going on between us. And sometimes there'll be a conversation and the words will open it up and it'll be like somebody shines a light on and I understand it better. So I think there's an assumption that our sensing and feeling and being able to be together without words is one thing, but it may not be the wholeness of the best communication that you can obtain from yourself.
Absolutely. I wouldn't suggest that it is.
And I think of the famous words through history of all the, you know them as well, we all know them, I can't think of any right now.
What, me worry?
Words. Words, yeah, that like shine a light on something.
Yes.
And when that happens to me, I respond. It's like like a little revelation.
Right.
Like somebody puts a spotlight, or the sun
comes
out.
The presence or absence of words is.
So
it doesn't require any, you know, preference or value.
It's just not what we're doing here.
Well, we are. We're not sitting here silently. We're talking.
Well, right now we're talking a lot.
Okay.
Are we? I mean, are you? Because I don't know what you do when I'm not here. I'm only here.
You'll never find that out unless you listen to the recordings when you're not here.
Oh, shoot.
Well, last Tuesday we had a D-Fest.
This is better
than it was incredible.
Sitting home watching TV, I'll tell you. Huh? Oh my God. I forgot. That's a problem.
No, I wasn't suggesting you were doing
anything. No, I just forgot that thing was on.
That's good. That's the idea.
Well, there's no identification of people when you put it in the internet.
Nobody knows who anybody is.
Yeah, it's just words coming out. Yeah.
That's right.
I'll put captions
better
now, just for you.
Huh?
We
I'll
use
put
that
captions
voice
now, distortion.
Just for you.
You will not.
Yeah.
Older woman equals. And then you put your name.
In the field of one, who are we trying to impress? No, to explain. It's that sense of the illusion of separation, of I separate from experience, from someone else's experiences. I need to tell you.
Yeah, you need validation
something.
About your own experience.
And then you nod and agree, and I know that's for better.
It's connection. You feel your connection.
And it's really interesting to see that if there is no two, what am I making this so important about, distinct from something else? You know, it's a question. I don't have the answer.
You mean if you're by yourself?
No, a feel. No, I'm saying that there's no such thing as... I get a feeling that there's no such thing as two. There's one experience and a lot of ideas about it. And when the ideas settle, there is no two. It's only when I start thinking, I am looking at something else, not me, and trying to communicate, shaking, poking, get some reaction, you know, or maybe I do it to myself, this thought, challenging this thought. But if I settle down a little bit into this deeper question, what if I just let things be what they are without adding more to it? It's a question. Without asserting to get some kind of effect. And it's kind of fun to watch. Things still happen. And maybe it's not my volition, my doing. That's really fun. That you were successful because you did it right. You fail because you did it wrong. We'll tell you why. What if I don't care anymore?
But what if you're seeking understanding and you're not asserting anything? You're not trying to assert anything.
But what if
you just want to understand how another person is perceiving something? That's a different story, isn't it? See, you're...
But it may not be someone else. That's what I'm saying. There's something in your head that says someone else I want to understand.
That's true.
But back up from it, I think inquiry takes away my from it. It suggests taking away my or I from it.
Yeah.
To simply understanding arising.
Oh, all by itself. In other words, you're trying to make it happen.
In the field, yeah, then my understanding. I wanting to know something other, you know, getting a sense of other.
But my understanding is the only understanding I have.
That's one.
It doesn't stay there.
Why shrug? I mean, you know.
It's fun.
That's a, you know, that's your gold mine. That's your gold mine.
Well, you're seeking understanding just by your conversation here. You're looking at it, you're looking at the different components of the experience, and I feel it seems to me that you're seeking understanding while you're trying to putting it into words.
Well, let me throw some words back. Unraveling. It left that quickly.
That's
unraveling
what it does.
Assumed misunderstandings is more accurate.
Oh, so you're thinking that your understandings are misunderstandings.
Yeah,
you haven't perceived the truth.
I have a collection
the
of
reality presumptions.
And sometimes I'm full of them.
Yeah.
And when they sort of settle down and fade away, this gets a little more juicy.
Oh, I see.
And rich. It's not for me.
Uh-huh.
I think I understand.
I understand that.
It's the obscuration of my assumed understanding is now
not important.
So important.
It's not important. Just
So it's a little bit reversed. And that's what I find really enjoyable. Collection. my cottage and flex it in the future, it'll become empty. I can't wait.
I don't see that happening anytime soon. But
yes. What do you need for your next gathering? A 10-yard dumpster.
My sense is this has a, let's say it has a tendency or a proclivity toward greater simplicity. A lot of the ways that we entertain ourselves, distract ourselves, accumulate stuff or memories,
it's a clusterfuck.
Starts to, you know, in a sense, fall away. We become familiar with a quality of nourishment or not to, which is so remarkably simple and so remarkably intimate and at hand that we had never imagined in a million years that the presence of myself was the greatest discovery. So these habits that we all have, you know, and the various ways that we have them for accumulating accoutrements, rainy day materials, right? Which could be stuff in my garage or stuff in my head, right? All these rainy day materials, we don't have the same attachment or interest or affection for them anymore. As a matter of fact, having and maintaining all the stuff that we thought was really good to accumulate in the first place now becomes, you know, just to exaggerate a point, terrifying. I can't even handle, right, being encumbered by the things that a day ago I had to have.
Trimming away at the chicken fat, I guess.
If there's a discovery to be made, if one is somehow ignited to make a discovery, we're just suggesting that, well, we might as well make it here. We might as well make it now. Is there a better place? Is there a better time? Is there a better circumstance than how about now and here to lend our attention and our affection to this discovery?
This discovery. As people age, this begins to happen to them in their life, and they're living it out. This is exactly why I'm divesting myself of my material things, and also not only my material things, my books, which carry certain thoughts that
yes.
I thought were so important.
Yes.
And I realized that they're not that important anymore.
That's right.
And whatever I have is within me.
Yes.
It's already there.
Yeah, you're happy to discard yourself.
Yeah, so I don't have to dust them and move them and do
no.
all that, so I can get rid of all that.
Right. Yeah.
So it's interesting that I'm living that out, and so it doesn't seem like. So it's a funny thing to think that we come here to do that, and I find myself being aware almost all the time that I'm not who I was a while back, and those things just are meaningless. Whatever I am, I am, and I am who I am. And that's it. So I understand what you're talking about.
You can appreciate the contrast, if you will, between accumulating right ideas, right strategies. Let's say the lessons in A Course in Miracles. Of tangling with a workbook for inner peace, deeper understanding, more spiritual elasticity, better relationships, less anxiety, less apprehension, right?
But none of those fit why I'm doing it.
This is hypothetical. Okay. The contrast is we can approach the miracle of being, you know, from the point of view of trying to have to set things right as a remedy for disquietude, for suffering. Mm-hmm. And maybe we, at some stage in our right maturing process, discovery process, spiritual unfolding process, if we want to be smartass about it, you discover something new. Rather than being on the lookout for how you could, should change, you might become just completely receptive to the nature of being as a total immersive sufficiency, which is a very different way of hanging out with each other and with oneself than storytelling or working a program for the sense of a future kickback.
Mm-hmm. And you're just going to be happy when X, Y, and Z happens in some future date. Things will be better then.
Yeah, and our suffering naturally goes into its own maturing process. It becomes, let's say, less intense. Less, we become less restless around it. We're not so driven to remedy the horrific problems that we thought we had a year ago, a month ago, a day ago, a minute ago. And this is a potentially incredible discovery. That being is of the nature of sufficiency, ambiguity.
Yeah, but there's something about the word understanding and the concept of desiring understanding.
Yeah.
Which is important here when you talk about working the program or working the material,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
You talked about a number of reasons, maybe a kickback later on,
yeah,
a payoff of some kind.
Sure.
So I can, for myself, I'm very clear that I always want more understanding, and I don't know why. So that's a payoff for me.
Yes, right.
But it's not to impress anybody, because there's nobody I know that I could impress with.
No.
Yeah, I mean, there's nowhere I can talk about those things.
Yeah.
I just quietly get the understanding, but especially with the Course in Miracles, I'm comparing it to what I know of Christianity.
Right.
And I'm comparing it to what I know of the Seth material.
Yes.
And I'm comparing it to what I know of the Edward Allan White series of books called the Betty Books,
uh-huh,
the channeled material, the
right,
Abraham material.
Yes.
And a lot of other things. And they're coming together in my mind, and I get the biggest kick out of that.
Nice.
So, it's neither good nor bad. It's just who I am.
The biggest kick. Go for it.
I don't know why. I can't think why. I had a reason for saying that. I forget what it was.
Desire to understand more.
How all the pieces fit together. All the pieces.
Yeah.
Of human experience fit together a little bit more and more.
Yes. I mean, it's thrilling to explore all of these avenues and perspectives. And enjoy, again, as a feeling experience, not just, right? You're
exactly
enjoying as a feeling experience a puzzle, a confluence,
exactly,
of incredible feeling tones, you know, coming together, nourishing you. You get a kick out of it.
The incredible realization that you begin, that what you believe about your highest value or God, whatever you want to call it, is shaping up into something that you see maybe as like one intelligence which is really running everything, but it's intelligence, everybody is tuning into it.
And you are it. So in a sense, you don't need to understand anything outside of yourself in some weird way.
Well, I enjoy it.
Right.
And I have a need. I want to do it. And that might be just a neurotic need. I don't know, but who knows. But I have always had it, and it's not going to go away because it's more intense now than it ever was. I'm getting more of a kick out of it. I'm seeing the pieces come together, and I'll be in one thing, and I'll say, oh, that in Christianity they put it this way, you know, and I see all the pieces. It makes me feel that I am one of vast numbers of living entities that have been seeking to understand, and that I'm connected. That's the payoff for me.
Great.
Is that I feel connected in a way that I don't get that anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we're supposed to be talking. We're talking about the right thing here.
Too late.
Too late. I know. You didn't shush me. Okay. Back to business.
It's easy to loiter. All you need is a little something to drink, a cigarette, you know, some snack food. We're easy. Something to put in your mouth from time to time, you know. This is, this is cool. It's all good.
Does anybody want some attention? Yeah, I'm gonna like open it up and make it.
It
doesn't do that.
He has a strong male hand. Oh, he can get his hand.
I don't want to bust it.
I just needed something salty. Please, anybody.
Thank you.
I'll eat a chip. Why not? They're good natured. Might as well. Good natured chips.
Probably good for you.
I don't know. I doubt it. I just needed some salt. That was the worst thing available.
See what's possible if you. We start playing around just with the non-ordinary feeling tone of present experience without influencing it, right? We're not imposing any particular influence or destination or forcing a takeaway from just loitering at the giant.
Or demanding anything on someone else to explain themselves or, you know.
Yeah. Now, in that kind of easefulness, questions about the nature of thought being, right, as an immaculate, right, immediacy as contrasted with a pointer, right? Even if thought appears to be pointing and referential, which of course it is, it's still also an immaculate immediacy. Still appearing, right?
Same
popping
as,
into
as
view
anything else.
In within the whole, right, realm. And thought itself is, I think, largely misunderstood. In that our presumption is that thought is occurring to a thinker, or that thought justifies the thinker. We don't ask the same questions, let's say, of a cloud appearing in the sky that's morphing quickly because of the turbulence of the air or the temperature, or we don't say, well, are you actual or are you appointed? Right?
Are you actual or are you...
But we might have that question of the nature of thinking only because, I would say, it appears that there's a thinker, that there's a receiver or recipient of thinking that wants to know, wants to understand, wants to have, let's say, a more articulate appreciation of what is thought. Is it this? Is it that? Is it this, not that? Is it that, but this? Right? But wouldn't it be strange if our interest in thinking were as nonchalant as our appreciation of a cloud in the sky.
Was this nonchalant?
Which is a nice word, by the way.
Nonchalant. It's melodious. In my ordinary life, I don't think much of my thoughts. They just sort of flow through.
And aren't we so happy when hopefully soon after we lie down at the end of a busy day, that the impulse of directed or self-amassing thinking goes into dreaming, goes into release of self.
Well, it depends how invested you are in that. If it's the same as like a cloud, you're not, to me, I don't experience that as much anymore. It's not like, I'm like, thank God there's no more clouds, you know?
Yeah.
It's not, it's right. Just, it's not the same.
Yeah, like, see, I'm sorry. Oh, I just read something. I just read the line of it. I didn't read it. It was something like, people would rather give themselves an electric shock than or something like that, you know?
Yeah, or take as much drugs as you can, or shoot yourself in the head, or whatever.
But so they want to do that, but only, like, under certain, like, they still want to leave the remnants of themselves, though, right? So, like, why is it so hard to, you know, give that up, and yet we're trying to do it, paradoxically, by drowning ourselves with
more
food,
of it.
Whatnot.
We're trying so hard to give what up?
Oh, like our ruminations are, you know,
thinking,
yeah,
analyzing, comparing, and
yeah,
and
discursive.
Yeah. Okay. We're trying. Yeah. Here we're trying to give it up. You
well,
mean
just
the world
in general? Yeah,
the world in
general.
General.
Yeah, they want to. You know, jumped out of airplanes.
They don't know how to do it. In many cases.
I imagine it's like eating leftovers. It's not the same as a fresh meal. And then you have these ideas, and they were ever entertaining at first. And then they become less.
Well, in a sense, I mean, I'm just using the leftover thing to spark to me, like, well, not if you're creative about it. I mean, I love my leftovers, and they can be better sometimes than the other things, you know. It really lies in where, how you want to, you know.
If they morph into something.
Well, how come that's true, though? I mean, how come people want to obliterate their thought states, but they don't want to obliterate themselves? They don't want themselves to dissolve. Am I missing something here? Am I interpreting it wrong?
People, clients, yourself, who are we referring to?
Just in general, the world at large, right? We all like our addictions, right? Because our addictions...
Well, there's no real, world at large that we could really meaningfully address. Because it's too strange. It might be more helpful to see what your interests are. What do you want to do?
Well, I can.
You want to drown out your thoughts, but you don't want to kill yourself, is what you're saying.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
You still want to be you and stuff.
So, like, take the edge off a little, but come on.
Right.
Not all the way.
Yeah. I still want to eat some chips and watch TV.
Drink a glass of wine. There's a nice buffer, but, you know.
Having pleasing experience is great, isn't it? And if thought or obsession or something is going on that is interfering with my having pleasing experience, then if I could, I would medicate that somehow. So I wasn't afflicted, but still myself. And it might be taking it too far, in a manner of speaking, mm-hmm. and conjecture. If I were to opt for total obliteration. Take a deeper breath.
And I go, are they really my thoughts? Am I really directing this show? And then I break a energetic smile, and I let go of the participation in that trap. Not stop it, not start it, not feed it, not feed it. It's that, it becomes that annihilated from the possessive ownership of my thinking. It's delicious, my thinking is torturous. It's, whoa.
You mean you stop in midair and you
yes,
say, what the bleep do I know?
What really gets me about some of the discussions and the things that really like tweaked me inside was, where's the chooser? Who's creating this, you know, as an I, and making things happen or not? I want peace or I want something else. I want to obliterate the self to be liberated. I value it. Two. Where is it? Where is that I? I mean, this question has come up a lot. But that's the one that's that I see shows up so often, even in, as I'm speaking. There's a strong I in this. Yet I can smile at that now as, okay. I don't have to claim the fruits of some great track of thinking, and I don't have to beat myself up for some ridiculously foolish track of addictive banging my head against the same block everywhere for no good reason.
About any of your behavior, for that matter, it's like, oh, I don't know why the fuck I did that.
Yeah.
Next.
and no concern that if I, quote unquote, don't get a handle on things, my world will go to hell in a handbasket.
Mm-hmm.
Very presumptuous.
That's presumptuous.
Very presumptuous. And the liberation of saying, if I let go of me trying to own any of it, even the good stuff, I don't have to beat myself for the things that don't seem to work according to what? Some idea or understanding? I don't know. I'm done.
You become irrelevant to yourself. What more fun could you have? Yeah, I mean, that's a strong word, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's not an active...
Not really, yeah. It's not,
it's not,
you know,
an active person.
Yeah, I mean, becoming disinterested in oneself is like, oh, this is insane, but I'm just not afflicted by it anymore.
Yeah, it's not necessarily like you can still be very interested in yourself, but
not,
not? Afflicted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not, and realize that how not static it is, so there's not really anybody there, you know, to begin with. There's really no...
Awareness is diffuse by nature. Awareness is not particular by nature. Particularization can appear in awareness, and we all know how that feels. But also, it's remarkably... What's the word? Imparticular? Non-particular? Unparticular? A-particular?
Impersonal.
Impersonal. Yeah. Right.
But when you're curious about what other people think, you diffuse the importance of what you think.
Well, if you're a mature adult, then you're available to other people to discover what's on their minds. You might,
I mean,
you might do that, yeah.
Well, that's the value of doing that. What do you think?
Yeah.
That's the the whole value is, it for me, I don't see any other value in it other than to be checking against what I think.
Okay.
And that puts my thought in a different, it's one of many thoughts, not the only one. And if I don't know what everybody here is thinking or wherever, then I tend to think that what I'm thinking is right or true or whatever.
What thought does or doesn't do, and the nuance of identifying with thought, is unusual. There's no real set of rules that anyone could follow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our personalities and our behavior and how we treat ourselves or each other, the moods that we go through in a day, in a week, in the cycle of a life are like, whoa! They're just too wild. They're just too unfettered for any of us to commit to anything that, you know, we can meaningfully self-accuse. I don't know what's going on.
Well, but we like to referentially do that with good, bad, right, wrong.
That's how...
However you want to frame it and make it up.
Yes, yes, yes.
Have fun.
You could say that awareness, consciousness, sentience, whatever you feel like referring to, does seem to have as much of an interest in identifying, rooting, particularizing, creating myth, anecdote,
fantasticizing.
All of those.
I made that word up.
That's fantasticizing is fantastic.
But don't you see that more clearly when you, if you're open to what other people are experiencing?
I don't know if you have to qualify it by being open to other people.
Open to.
You have. Your job is to be.
The fact that other people are thinking other things.
Well, your job is to be, in a sense, open to the discovery of your own consciousness.
I already am. Well, I want to know what Dave thinks, and we spend time sitting and I try to find out and understand what he thinks.
That's great.
I want to know what Francine thinks. So
you didn't know where on that one.
Is that well? I could talk to you for 100 years. I still wouldn't know.
Me neither.
I understand that, but maybe I know more than.
No, we're not going to do that. It's lovely if that's something that pleases you to find out what other people think and to engage in spiritual or secular discourse.
I'm okay with that for myself.
That's great.
I know other people aren't as curious about what other people think as I am. People say that people remark on
busybody. I'm a busybody.
Okay, there you go. You're a spiritual busybody.
A spiritual, in all ways. It's not all spiritual, I'll tell you that.
I was being kind.
But Dave said something about, my response to what you said, and I can't remember which of the sentences was, I'm in charge of paying my bills and I'm responsible and I'm going to suffer the results if I don't do it and it isn't effectively done. But and you, I don't know what you were talking about not being so self-important. It had to do with that. And one phrase that you said right away in my thought response was that in my practical life, you know, if I don't shop, I don't eat. If I don't do the laundry, so it is important that I have a presence, an effect, and that I plan. And I can't remember, you know, what you said, but it's just another angle on what you were talking about. I think you were aiming, generally speaking, at the idea, it's audacious of us to think that we can really have any control over anything.
You could see how your present experience is it doesn't have to resolve to a identity. to a set of preferences, to what's going on or what's not going on, to a universe or a world where you're hoping that you might still have the pleasure of controlling stuff, or not.
Can it be free of preferences?
It by its own nature is absolutely free of preferences. Even when preferences are occurring, it's still free of preferences. I mean, look at the, let's say, the delight or the madness of having a preference. I mean, that's also not resolvable. It's bizarre. Some preferences you have with great gusto. Some, not so much. Some preferences we're really, let's say, proud of. We think they're marks of our improved, right, adult maturity and persona. Some of our preferences we don't want anyone to know. Ever. Never.
You even cringe when you tell yourself about it.
Yeah, I can hardly even admit it to myself. It's just, oh my
God.
I need two ankle bracelets, not just one.
Where even I can't see.
Is it preference of kind of a more mature brand of work compared to an addiction? Because I'm thinking of the work that book from a while ago, Handbook to Higher Consciousness.
Yeah, right.
Who wrote that? What was that?
Keys? Ken Kesey? Keys? Ken Keys?
No,
not Kesey.
He's the one who wrote the coconut.
Yeah.
Keys.
Just Keys.
Keys, yeah.
That's not the same as one who
took the child race.
Yes.
It kind of unpacked from addictions to preferences.
Right.
So now we're busting on the word preference.
Yeah.
Arising of preference, which seems to be more of a gentle selection process than an addiction, like, gotta have it, right? But yet, even that is being suggested to be somewhat of a what?
I don't know. What do you make of it, right?
I mean, we're describing it in such a way that makes preferences sort of not a useful virtue.
Well,
I didn't think like, that. I was just thinking of like, oh, sometimes I like yellow more, you know, just in general, basic, right, you know.
Everything is just ambiguously appearing. Your identification, consciousness, what you're seeing, feeling, tasting, touching, hearing, smelling, how you're feeling about that, how acutely aware you are of, you know, nuances in your environment, what you're doing with your body.
And it changes constantly.
Check it out.
Yeah.
You know.
So that ownership is teasing out of it.
Well, you could say the conclusion that we draw of the nature of continuity of self can become very suspicious when, let's say, we're quiet enough to actually feel this and see it bubble up, see it percolate up. Absolutely free of self.
It does seem like you have to kind of take some attention or investment out of your normal self world just to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's like you have to, but that
the mechanism, if there is one, is bizarre.
Really a mechanism. But
no, there's not.
I mean, that could just happen instantaneously.
It's all that's ever happening.
Yeah.
It's all that's ever happening.
I know, but I still like to say could be.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently.
It's all that's ever happening, but
could
it's also accompanied by the profound sense or confidence that we place in being individuated. Particularized, having a life, making choices, being interested in what other people think, having preferences, good, bad, and different ones, what to do with ourselves, what not to do with ourselves, how to get this right, how to stop caring. I don't know. It's odd how an force of association and identification arises out of nowhere, about nothing at all, but seems to punctuate our experience or create the sense of an individuated and durable self. We are all remarkably familiar to ourselves. We would never even imagine in our wildest dreams that there's no self. It doesn't make any sense that there's no self when my firsthand experience, apparently day after day, for as many years as I've so-called been alive, is that I'm so profoundly, intimately familiar with myself. It's a bit of a counterintuitive challenge, right?
Well, it is, you know, if there was anything that happened before now, like brainwashed or told that you need to do something about that, right? That there's this something to protect or be or do something about or represent. Whatever.
The symptoms are, right?
A million, yeah.
Yeah, the symptoms of self, of identification, of interest, of preference, of durability, of takeaway, of spiritual enlightenment as contrasted with something less than that, is unbelievable. What do you feel like?
Well, that depends on the circumstances.
Okay.
Sometimes I feel like blank, blank, blank.
Yeah. If you don't have a future, and you don't, what do you feel like? What comes to mind? What comes to heart? What suffuses the weird irrefutability of present experience?
Why did you say you don't? If you don't have a future and you don't, why did you say that?
Well, because you don't. You have imagination, which may appear
saying,
as if you can occupy a future.
Oh, okay.
You're like,
the future will never arrive because when it arrives, it's not the future.
It's the present, yeah. Well, that's
kind
of playing with the semantics.
Well, not just semantic. I mean, yes, we can play with semantics, and we do, and we have fun doing that. I'm saying you don't have a future. And I'm not kidding around. That's not a semantic puzzle.
Well, I experienced that being 80-some. I remember a few years ago where I conceived of myself, felt myself, to have a future, even though it may not be very long. And this last year, I have passed through some kind of into a different mode, or a different stage, or a different something, a different way of seeing, feeling, experiencing, and being in this world than I have ever known before. And I can truly say that I understand the feeling of not having a future. And that when I am alone in my house, in my bedroom at night, and it's quiet, and I'm laying there, and maybe I have been thinking about all the things, good and bad, that have happened, and my mind has been a jumble, and then things will get very quiet, and I have a sense that I am not, it doesn't matter. None of it really matters, and that I am sort of an entity floating around. I don't see myself as having to get up and deal with pain or do the laundry or go shopping or do anything. I just feel like a sort of...
We're going to get you a t-shirt.
Untethered.
Disembodied D.
Yeah, disembodied D, yeah. And I don't... There have been times, because I have AFib among... And sometimes it's very bad. And I really feel, okay,
it's coming.
I may not get through tonight, and it's okay. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I have passed the point of being afraid of that and moved into a point of saying, that's okay. So I'm getting funny feelings when you talk of the way you're talking now, because it's hitting this thing of not having a future. Every day of my life, and I say to my friends, we better do this now. We better talk about this now because I may not be here tomorrow. I better pay you today because I may not be here tomorrow, or whatever it is, because I genuinely feel that way.
Rock and roll.
It's a sense of no future, and I'm okay with it. That's the amazing thing, that I'm okay with it.
Glad to hear.
Yeah. Well, it's good for me, that otherwise I'd be a wreck. I'd say, oh, what am I going to do? I have no future.
Well,
I can't do it tomorrow.
You have no idea what you'd think.
No, I don't. That's right. It's true.
You don't have any idea, and I'm not singling you out. None of us have any idea what's happening right now. What we're feeling, what we're thinking, what to take away, how to report on it.
I have a story.
We can all create a story in an instant about anything.
Best we can do.
What I'm suggesting is feeling this.
Okay, and that's what I'm talking about in my experience.
That's right.
I am making that clear, I hope. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, do we want does anybody want anything? What do we want? Well, I don't know. Sitting here with the giant is not really my idea of the culmination of my spiritual life. You know, I mean, it's not bad. I'm not in pain, but when I paint my masterpiece, is not going to look like while I was sitting in the corner of a local giant.
It's huge.
Yeah.
This is the thing. I mean, restlessness of mind or consciousness that's on the go, that's always clamoring, right? Self-identifying, creating stories, placing things in context. Like, it was really worth going to the giant on Thursday night because I had a great experience. Or like, I can't believe I went to that stupid meeting again. I mean, it sucked. You know, the coffee place was closed, and I don't know. It's like, I should have gone to the Who concert, and, you know,
I was thinking I should have gone to bed.
I should have gone to bed.
Dave,
I should have watched Dancing with the Stars.
I said, oh, I'll just be here by myself and think miserable thoughts.
So you think you can dance? There's got to be something better to do than this. Because my life is, my life's the shit. There's got to be something better than this.
Sometimes I'll like have a hot flash if I like find myself anticipating something, and then knowing I'm anticipating something, and then all of a sudden this like sweat all come over me. What is that?
Are you nervous that you're not going to get it?
No, it's more
like, are you nervous that you will get it?
I don't even know. It's sort of like the realization of being pulled or something. I don't know.
Realization, you want it.
It's like going to the firing squad or something. I don't know.
Oh, that you dared to want something?
No, nothing like that.
We caught you, we found you, we tried you, and you're going to die by firing squad.
Yeah. Like a pleasant sort of memory, and then it's like, oh, that's a pleasant memory, anchor back someplace else, and then it's like panic. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I mean, you're nodding, so maybe you recognize that.
Day in and day out. No, panic's my middle name. What makes this, or anything for that matter, a good experience? One that was definitely worth attending. And here we are, at the contemporary cutting edge of the imagination of our lives. So, I mean, recount. Go ahead. Name all the experiences that were really worth going to and all the ones that really were a big mistake. Because here you are. You're the product of all the so-called choices that you made for the great experiences and the crappy ones. And I can't even remember a goddamn thing.
Okay. I know exactly what makes what I feel is a successful meeting or gathering for me.
I'd like to hear it.
At any time when I'm in a group and I speak and I feel that I've been heard and understood, that is a wonderful time for me. It doesn't matter where it is. It can be at the bottom of a cesspool.
How did we do this evening? Would you give us a 1, a 5, 1 being the best, 5 being the worst, or some? How did we do?
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, I guess you were maybe 8.
We're an 8? Okay, good. You should find a 10 meeting. You're wasting your time with us.
No, not at all.
Oh, okay, 8's good. 8's good.
Good.
Okay. I don't know how your scale works.
Because they fill in the spots. See, even 10s don't do it all. You have to have 8s and 6s and 5s because they fill in all the spots that the 10s don't hit.
That's why those guys in Spinal Tap, their amplifiers went up to 11. They made them special to go up to 11. Because 10...
I certainly think I understand a lot more what you're doing. What you're attempting.
I'm glad you do.
What you seem to be attempting to do.
Synopsis.
I keep seeing how we all stray off, and I contribute to that every time I open my mouth. But I'm getting a sense of it. It's like a sense of it. It's coming in upon me.
Yeah. It's not that we're placing particular emphasis on that. But you might say it's an occupational hazard.
Yeah.
By doing this, whatever this is, to start to see, let's say, more clearly how we stray, how we bubble up, occupy an imaginary condition or a story, a reflection, and we just swim into, anecdotal consciousness. That anecdotal consciousness is great.
That's a great phrase.
But I would also say that
consciousness of our own stories.
Yes.
Over our own stories.
Yes. By encouraging or cultivating an atmosphere where we're invited to be ourselves. And I don't mean behaviorally, attitudinally, just strangely, ambiguously, without any particular destination, just be ourselves, without straying into, right, anecdotal representation.
So anytime you try to present yourself with your stories, that's anecdotal representation.
I would say, but I don't necessarily want to impose that on anyone.
We won't give you a gong or anything.
Yeah. Right.
We all do it.
It's not like group therapy.
It's not
where
like
you're
group
encouraged
therapy,
to
yeah.
tell
no.
your stories.
Like the opposite.
Well, it's deeper. It's actually,
opposite.
It's actually, I would say, deeper and more effective than group therapy. The reason I suggest that is our dear friend Haley asked me a question in an email exchange because I had sent something out about the tools of participating in an inquiry into awakening kind of couch club. She was curious naturally about, well, what are the tools? And I thought that was a great question because, I just make shit up anyway. Think, oh, yeah, well, there are tools. And then someone said, well, what are the tools? And then I was on the spot. But the tools are what we're speaking about, is that rather than navigating and negotiating the vicissitudes of each personality in the circle, right, the clamoring of circumstances and events appearing in your so-called life, our agreement is to peer into and enjoy, reflect upon, become furious with, or happy with the strange, ambiguous nature of experiencing or consciousness itself. My assertion is that by doing that, then all of the symptoms of narcissism and codependence and preoccupation and attention seeking and hooking people psychologically and emotionally actually start to cleanse. They auto-cleanse.
That is really interesting, though, that it does seem like just by not feeding it into it, like, that's, like, the best thing you can do for anybody. And then they can see it. You can see it. So it's like passing the ball back in their court in some way enough times that eventually on your own you're like, well, this sucks. You know, you can see it for yourself. And that's, you know, the most clear seeing you can get in some way is to see it for yourself. What else?
We're let's say,
no,
enjoying.
I don't understand what you said. That's completely beyond my understanding.
Sense.
I'm totally. What do you see for yourself? I mean, I...
Well, like you just said, that you could see, in, you know, on your own, that those things bubbling up.
But they're thoughts, and they have words connected, and they always want to be expressed. I always want to know what other people are thinking about those things.
Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. Maybe
well, there are times when you intuit.
Sometimes you're interested, sometimes you're not interested. I mean, predominantly you're interested in yourself, in the lusciousness of your own firsthand experience. And so being interested in what someone else is saying or thinking suits whom? Not them, it suits you. It benefits your experience, your enjoyment of yourself, or your so-called enjoyment of them.
No, I don't exactly agree. I hear you, but I can take somebody else's thought and ponder it and work it around, and eventually I will appreciate where it belongs and how it is more authentic than what I have thought myself.
Yes,
I think thoughts are delicious to think about.
I'm not suggesting they're not. I'm saying the whole motivation for being interested in people and how they think and how they feel, mm-hmm. and the luscious nature of communication, whether
yes.
silent or through
what
thinking,
yes.
pleases you profoundly.
Mm-hmm.
It nourishes you profoundly.
Absolutely.
That's what we're talking about.
I put that down to the fact that in my early years I wasn't allowed to speak or think. That wasn't permitted, and words were not permitted. So I guess that it's sort of
maybe not. Maybe your enjoyment of other people and how they think and what they feel and communicating with them is just a God-given gift of curiosity of yours, which is not the consequence of anything that happened or didn't happen in your early life.
That could be. In a way, I see it as a way of acknowledging and honoring other people.
Okay, but other people are your imagination. And honoring them pleases you.
Other people are my imagination. That is way over, beyond my comprehension.
It's always like the dream metaphor is good, I think. Right? When you go to sleep at night, you dream a bunch of people are there.
I'm talking about real people. I'm talking about my sister who's limping around because she has pain. I'm talking about dealing with Francine when we try to work together and learn together and understand how to be with each other. I'm
yes.
talking about
well,
real people.
But it's not necessarily that.
Actually,
not
you're talking
real.
About ideas.
It's not what you think they are. Not necessarily that they're not real, right? In some way, it's just your ideas and concepts of them are
Well, we talk, sometimes when we talk and then we both say the opposite. Well, I don't believe in that. That's not the way I see it, period. And so then gives me a lot to think about. How does this person, I don't mean to be picking on you, it's just that she's the only one I have a close relationship right now. I mean, closer. So, okay. Well, it's all a risk for the mill.
Back to the tools for a moment.
Yes.
Just so I can justify myself.
Okay.
Because I'm really interested in justifying
thinking.
Myself.
I'll give you a chance to do some creative thinking.
Yeah. Here's this vitality. This is a vitality. Mm-hmm. It's not inert. It's not hanging out in the corner. It's rich mm-hmm. with reflection, with feeling.
Energy.
With energy. So you could say the tools of an inquiry kind of a thing is that we're just hanging out within the vitality rather than reporting on, right, the imaginary vicissitudes of my life's circumstances and events. The vitality itself has become interested in itself as vitality, not as takeaway, not as story, not as reporting, not as justification, not as attention seeking. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you. And so by participating in the gift of enjoying vitality for its own sake, will auto-heal, auto-release the habits of mind or psyche that are narcissistically, codependently, addictively demanding. It has that kind of potency. It sneaks up on you. In other words, instead of thinking that I have to process my day, my week, my relationships with XYZ, I just enjoy vitality.
Back to vitality.
And the vitality completely auto-erases all of the afflictive associations that I thought that I was justified in having about the circumstances and events of my life or the relationships that I'm in that cause me discomfort.
The vitality obliterates all the...
Yes, the vitality obliterates fantasy. That's the tool.
Because all of that is fantasy, not reality.
Yes. This does not mean to suggest that we're denying someone's suffering or thinking that you can just talk yourself out of, you know, your strong sense of belief or identification. Or the suffering and consequences that may accompany it. That would be a little dismissive, right? Mm. A little too much hubris, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So that's not the emphasis. We appreciate that whomever shows up has their life, has their stuff, has their ups and downs, may have really intense periods of whether it's health or financial or crisis of going on, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, that's all cool. That's all in. None of it's refused, right? But the agreement, if you will, the gentle person's agreement is like, well, breathe, return one's capacity just to enjoy the vitality. That's where the magic is. Not in the
primary. That's like the primary.
Yes, because it's primary.
Where the primary interest.
Well, not unlike what you described at night, I guess. Right. I mean, that you don't have a future and you're like just an entity experiencing.
I will experience myself that way, I'm not saying that stays all the time.
No, no.
But I will experience that.
Yeah.
And I guess I would say it stays more and more as time goes on. Because how will I... No, I don't want to go there. So... No, I what you were saying, that and this is very rich and it's complex.
We moving to a nine?
Yes, yeah. Sir, you are.
What other tricks do you have to get to a 10?
I don't know. I don't know if I got them.
No.
I might not have what it takes.
Finish your kombucha maybe after that.
But
I
was just thinking how the vitality and the two aspects that you just spoke of. One was the vitality of the situation, and how would you phrase the other? The stories we tell, and the analysis, the thinking, the naming, and all of that.
The analogy.
Okay. In real life, it seems to me that they fade in and out.
What the fuck does real life mean? What?
I don't know why I said that.
I mean, neither. All right, we're at 10. That was it. Now we're at 10.
The second you say,
in real life.
What am I saying?
I don't know. But if you've got real life, let us in. Send us a postcard from real life.
I was thinking of my interactions. Their hands up and going, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
In your interactions with people,
uh-huh.
Those things flow in and out. The vitality is there, and the other aspect is there also.
The vitality and the analogy are not other than themselves. They're not separate. Samsara and nirvana are not separate.
Just thinking, it's not separate.
But it does seem like it focuses in one area more than the other in some way. Instead of a more diffuse kind of, it kind of latches on to only one aspect.
That's true. Yeah, I understand what you said, and I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, to me, this is kind of playing with that, that there's other options besides that one, stupid aspect. Not stupid, but, well, to me it's stupid. But
misguided.
It's just a fixation that's like, well...
It's a fiction.
Maybe try playing around. There's a million other ways to experience this.
First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is...
God, he's singing.
Were you able
what
to get
did
back
I say to make him sing?
So the tool.
It's a bonus with the 10. You get the
good.
Singing. You get the singing with the 10
like
experience.
Like the Schoolhouse Rock or something.
That's right.
You wouldn't be able to say tools A, B, and C.
No.
Okay.
Discrimination is highly valued in all of these bright practices and cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Discrimination is used with great respect so that we can appreciate, you could say, self-appreciate living through analogy, living through fantasy, as contrasted with not living through fantasy, not living through analogy. That revelation, you could say, is the flow of discrimination. But then do we get interested in valuing one as contrasted with the other? And once we value this as contrasted with that, which way are we going? Into analogy or into vacuity?
Right?
Once there's the slightest preference or discrimination, that has a kind of a magnetic pull back towards analogy. Right?
Or any kind of fixation.
Instead
of that diffuse kind of...
Yes.
Like learning how to be with this in a multitude of different...
Yes.
Ways? That's not a good way to put it.
Well, presence... presence is a crappy word, really.
Right.
But it suggests, this... without discrimination, without preference, without feeling like you'd be better off in vacuity as contrasted with dwelling in analogy.
Right.
So the discrimination phase, which is valuable to go through as part of a yogic endeavor in any culture, in any psychiatry, is useful to a point. Then, right, you can't find a thought that means anything in particular, or that needs to be spoken, or that has to resolve. What would the absolute quiescence of self look like, or feel like? Could it be absolutely present? Could the miraculous quiescence of self be what's present?
Always.
We'd have to get good at getting rid of all the things we think are present.
Let's say through a phase of discrimination, we might identify an inventory of things that are distracting, that lend themselves toward analogy, anecdotal fancy. And even that can become of a different order of observation. Different order of magnitude of observation no longer goes through any inventory. Its seeing is present, ripe, complete, and is not particularized. That's the nature of your present intelligence.
And that's where you're feeling it and not verbalizing it. Because I was just trying to herb. I knew what you were talking about, but I couldn't find words.
You could say, as we are immersed in the feeling of presence without particularization,
yes.
We might tend toward a little quietude from time to time. A minute here, a couple minutes there, what the fuck? Right? It's not like we have to make a commitment to be... Mauna, the Sanskrit word for non-speaking, for, you know, the next 30 years. I mean, don't say shit, say shit, what?
Make stuff up, don't make stuff up.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting how illusory what appears to be showing up. Being less than fully present, even though there might be a lot of rumination, a lot of story, a lot of distraction, a lot of this and that. And under it is a perfect presence. In the midst of all that, where the judge, which happens all the time, is, oh, Barry, Fred, phew, Bob, and Alice, wow. And you just don't know. And to me, that's humbling. All human perception can be deceptive, even as we express ourselves and say, oh my God, I have to get rid of my illumination. Or, oh my gosh, aren't I doing it great? And it could be the opposite in this sense. So therefore, what is less than whole ever? What do you need to get rid of, or what do you need to correct? What do you need to adapt or adjust?
Nothing, unless you're making it up.
I find some joy in that remembrance, you might say, that I can't accurately judge anything.
Good night.
Good night, Susan. Good night. Unless we're getting late.
Well, I liked what was the thing from the other night? Just to reference something for for fun.
Yes.
If you don't put a nickel in the machine of self.
The Nickelodeon.
Yeah, all of it. That drops out all of it. You know, there's nobody there to even begin that process.
I wonder if any that looks like real wood in there. You see, suppose they ever burn it?
No,
yes,
think,
they do. They have a fire in the winter.
Do they?
Mm-hmm. No, you know what they are?
That's a gas.
Mm-hmm. They're like
artificial logs.
Cinder logs.
Oh,
not cinder. But
they light up and make it look like
ceramic.
Fire.
I see.
And it might throw off some heat, but it's gas, right?
Now, how do you know that? That's amazing.
Because my mom has one similar, and I thought it was the dumbest
okay.
thing I'd ever seen
okay.
in my life. You have to open windows when you use the
gas. I have to go home and rest my whatever.
So it puts off heat, but then you have to open the windows so you don't smell gas. It's great.
Well, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me and putting up with me.
I do. Do you need help at all in your car? Getting your car?
No,
your car?
I think I'm okay. Thank you, Francine. I'm okay. But
thanks
would
for
you
your
just...
generous score.
Pardon?
Thanks for your generous score.
Oh, you shouldn't. That's not a good way to be.
We're just teasing.
I'll send you my number.
You need
I
to.
Will.
No, don't write it down. Call me. Call me
okay.
if you want me to have it.
I will.